Welcome to the Childcare Business Coach Podcast with Evelyn Knight, where mindset mechanics come together for success. Evelyn Knight is the leader of the ECE revolution and is on a mission to touch 1 million children's lives through the elevation of the ECE community.
Hello and welcome to the Childcare Business Coach Podcast. My name is Evelyn Knight. I thank you for joining me today. Today I am joined by someone I met not too long ago, but I just automatically knew I had to have her on the podcast. Her name is Renee Riddle. We met during the TED Talk I did last month in North Carolina. And Renee, I will let you introduce yourself, talk about you, what you do, and then we will talk about why I had to go to you and say, oh my gosh, you got to be on my podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm Renee Riddle, like you said. I am the eighth grade math intervention specialist for Franklin School of Innovation in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm a graduate from Appalachian State University, and we just really talk a lot about, while I was there, we talked a lot about how important being developmentally responsive is to our students and how important it is to understand where they're coming from.
Yes, and that's what really just really got me when I heard you speak, and it was during the night that we were doing rehearsals that I was just like, oh, she's the person. And I know I told you last week when we were talking that one of the things for me is I don't always know why I end up somewhere, but it always ends up being for a reason. And I knew when I heard it, I was like, that's why I'm here. I need to connect with Renee because you are philosophically so aligned with what we do and what my mission here is. And even though I'm early childhood education and you're eighth grade, one of the things I'm always trying to teach the people in my world of ECE is that we are literally setting up that foundation today. And the executive brain functioning skills that are forming in those first 5 years of life are actually setting children up to be successful by the time they come to you.
Yes.
And when you were talking about the developmentally responsive practices, it just was like, this is it. She is the person who gets it. She gets what I'm trying to like really put out there in the world and how we need to work together. And all of us need to be developmentally responsive. So if you don't mind, I would love for you to tell your story and what, like you're awake, like it's your awakening, right? That's kind of how I think about it. We all have one. And unfortunately, a lot of times our awakenings are lessons we have to learn the hard way. So if you don't mind telling my audience about your story, I think I would love to just start with that and then we'll dive in.
Of course. So as I mentioned, like I went to college and learned about what developmentally responsiveness is. And it was just kind of one of those things I stored in the back of my head, like, yeah, that sounds cool. I'm totally going to implement that. And then I went into my first year of teaching and it was an absolute disaster for many reasons. But there's like one story I think of in particular, and mind you, I had a very unruly class, but there was this one student who I actually had a good relationship with. We talked, joke around. He would do the work in my classroom because I had found a way to convince him. And there's this one day, and it was during the second semester, and I clearly remember it because I was trying to work with him, and despite anything I tried, all the things, he just refused. And I was so fed up because I had dealt with like disrespect from kids. And I was just like, you know what? I just can't do this. And I just literally looked at him and went, okay, if you're not going to do this, just sit there. Don't do anything. And I just walked away and I went to go help another kid. And I just remember hearing a very distinct noise of a backpack unzipping and another student going, like asking that child if they're stupid. And so I turn around to yell at the kid who just called another kid stupid. And instead, that first student who I was struggling to get to work with was on roller skates, skating around my classroom. And he was so happy about it. And I just remember pure rage and just pure anger. And just, I was able to tell him like hallway, I grabbed my radio, I called the principal and I didn't say anything to that kid. I said absolutely nothing. And he just was sitting there begging me to change my mind, to not call the principal, to ask what's happening, all of this. The principal got there. I just stated what had happened. And I just walked back in my room. And the sad thing about this is I destroyed the relationship we had. He loved talking to me. He enjoyed hanging out with me and like talking about what's going on in his life. And when I just sent him out without talking to him, I changed everything. He no longer laughed and engaged with me. He stopped confiding in me and he was no longer doing work at all. So, you know, I just kind of in that moment realized like, wow, what I am doing in this moment and how I talk to my students is really big impact.
Absolutely. On the rest of their lives. And that is, I think, something that people miss. My background in education is what I focus on was neurological psychology. And I now understand that so much of who we become in the future is formed by those type of interactions. And I think what so many of us don't realize, especially in education, is behavior like that is really a cry for help. It really is. And for us in early childhood education, so when you tell the story, I know that that child probably didn't have the highest quality early childhood education, right? Because they didn't know how to communicate his needs. Yes. Now, with the proper ECE program that focused on those developmental skills of where, or the skills of where the child's brain is growing at the time, he would have developmented the skills. I can't talk today. I'm still recovering from my illness. So apparently I can't speak, but he would have been able to develop the skills that would have enabled him to come to you as somebody he trusted and said, hey, I'm really struggling right now and I need this, this, and this. But instead, he didn't know how to identify what was really happening. He didn't know how to communicate what was really happening. He probably didn't know what was really happening. But and that all starts before a child turns 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's where, for me, I feel like the field I belong to has one of the most important pieces of really helping children to be successful. Because had that child been in a program that was really, really high quality and focusing on developmentally appropriate practices and really neurological based, where is that child now? He would have been able to identify all those things. And and he could have come to you instead.
Yeah.
But so I don't think any teacher in your position would have done anything different. But I think it's important. I think you learned such a beautiful, important lesson in that they're trying to say something. Every behavior is a message.
Exactly.
And I feel like in our country, teachers have stopped listening to that message. Instead, they just label, oh, that's a bad kid. He's defiant. Yeah. He's not doing well. And what really struck me about hearing your talk that day was that you saw that.
Yes.
That you had the light bulb. It went off. And you basically changed your practice based on that experience.
Oh, yeah.
So exactly. Let's talk about that. How are you now more responsive? And the Renee of today, how would you deal with that child?
Yeah. So I think back to that moment a lot and like the different ways I could have handled it. First of all, just even starting at the beginning when he clearly was not working that day. And since then, I always just start with asking the kid like, hey, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And I find like that one question has like impacted the life of so many kids and how I respond. Like as soon as I get that defiance, I'm just like, hey, are you okay? Because it's surprising how many kids don't realize that they're not okay until they're asked.
Yes.
And that's purely because they just haven't learned those skills of identifying yet where they're at. But also their brains are under so much development during young adolescence in the middle school age that they're realizing they're feeling more complex emotions than they have before.
Yes.
So it's super vital. And beyond that, even if, you know, he still responded and I still responded the same way and he put on skates, I find that just talking to them is really important. You know, I probably would still send him to the principal's office. That wouldn't have changed. But in the hallway, I probably would have asked him, I'm like, what's going on? What's the reason for this? And heard him out. And I find that if I start the conversation with listening, it leads to a productive conversation instead of me talking at him. And when you talk at a child, they shut down. It makes sense. They don't want to hear it. If they don't feel heard, they don't respect what you have to say. And so I've taken that as well. I've sat in hallways with children for like 5-10 minutes talking to them and been able to get them back into my classroom to learn after that. Now it is pretty vital just to be able to hear the child because they're so used to being overlooked.
That is just beautiful that they are so used to being overlooked. I think everybody needs to hear that. And I don't care what age group that you're teaching in, it's exactly what's happening. Another thing you just said that really struck me is the listening, right? It seems like what we really need to do, and it doesn't matter what age you are or who you're dealing with. This can be an adult dealing with another coworker. We need to start listening instead of labeling.
Yes.
We are throwing labels on things. We are saying that is a bad kid. He is defiant. We're doing all these, they are statements. And a lot of times we project those things. And we could be at the gas station dealing with a person and we're going to do the same thing to them, right? They are this, they are that. And instead of labeling them, we need to start listening and looking and come from a place of curiosity. Oh, I've gone through a lot of just different things. And one of the things that I've realized after losing my husband is that I needed to start coming at life really and the people in my life from a place of curiosity.
Yes.
And when you approach people with curiosity, it changes everything. And like you said too, it's just asking sometimes, no matter what stage of life they're in. There were times where I know for me as an adult, I was losing my temper on people, snapping. And it was the same thing where it was just took that one person to say, are you okay? And just to really get me to see, oh gosh, maybe I'm not, you know? And so regardless of the age, it's almost like a human concept we need to learn, but especially for the children, they need it more, and it's so important because we don't really understand how we're impacting this person's future. Yes. And when I'm talking to people, I can see so many struggles and I have this clue of what happened to you when you were a child that now you can't make your own decision. Now you are always apologizing for every little thing you do. And all of that are things that we can help them with. Yeah. I love though how now you really just approach things differently and how you see the world different. We all have opportunities like the one you have had but so many people just kind of let life go by, but you've taken a stand to change. So now let's talk a little bit about now your current position and how it's really enabled you to step in to, you know, now really being able to serve the children in a way they deserve to be served.
Yeah. So currently I am the 8th grade math intervention specialist. So in the state of North Carolina and actually 33 other states, we have what's called MTSS, the multi-tiered system of support. So the way to explain it is it's kind of like a pyramid where the base of the pyramid is 85 to 95% of your student population. Where the general education, there's one teacher working with all the students and the kids are accessing the information just fine. Then there's tier two, where we have about 5 to 10% of our student population. And this is where my job is. This is where those students just need a little extra support. They don't need an IEPR 504 yet, but they just need some unofficial accommodations to help them out and to access the material while also still getting the same amount they get from tier one. And then there's tier three, which is where EC comes in with 504s, IEPs, things like that. And those are the students who need more specialized hands-on. And they are still getting just as much help as tier two students and tier one. So it's kind of a pyramid. The people at the top are getting all of the below, but only if they need it.
So
it's just really targeted intervention for kids. So my job is, like I said, tier two. And I push into the 8th grade classroom and I help out with the students who just need that extra support. I help the teachers learn how to provide tier two interventions and how to provide unofficial accommodations. So simple things as just going to the student more often or providing modified tests and quizzes just to see how that helps. And the goal is to eventually get those kids back into tier one. And so I'm kind of working myself out of a job, but I'm always needed.
Always needed, yes.
And then as well as I run the after school tutoring programs for mathematics. So I create my own curriculum for my students based off of the grant we have received. And from that, I help the students who are seen as the ones who just can't do math, you know, the ones who are struggling.
Oh, right, right.
And I help those kids. And what we do is basically create, it's called an interactive notebook. But I always explain to the kids as like, we're creating a textbook for you. Whatever goes in there is something that makes sense for you. So when you leave my tutoring program and graduate out of it, you can bring this to class. And when you're sitting there and you're staring at something like converting a decimal into a fraction, you're able to sit there and open up your notebook to where you wrote down your notes and how you understand it to help you succeed further.
That is awesome to give them that opportunity. And I love that part of what you do now is helping children not to fit into a box, you know, because it's like our education system expects children to conform. And one of my biggest pet peeves and part of the reason I'm in the private sector is because I know it just feels a lot of times like children are expected to conform to us as the adults instead of us as adults helping to adapt to the children who need us. And it's a lot like, I mean, the way you guys are tiered is perfect because a lot of children, they're fine. But then that percentage that isn't, they're the ones who end up having the behavior problems. They're the ones who end up really struggling. And then they're the ones who get these labels put on them, but it's not their fault. It's, but I always say 95% of behavior is the adult. It is not the child.
Yes.
It's because we don't know how to handle them. We don't know how to help them. And since behavior is a form of communication, we just have to help them learn how to communicate. So I was one of those who probably could have used your services for math. It was just something that was always a huge struggle for me. And just even just what it does to your self-esteem and everything is huge. So it's beautiful that you're giving children this opportunity now. And for those of us out here in the ECE world, I feel like we really, really have a responsibility to set them up. So by the time you're getting them, they're not struggling with those social emotional competencies. Yeah. They identify socially and emotionally, and they are just good to go. So it's really just a beautiful thing.
Definitely. And I think I've seen a lot of correlation between the students who are labeled as bad. Yes. They're not bad. They just don't do smart action. Not smart, but they do not
make bad choices.
Good actions. They do bad choices. Doesn't make them bad though. And I have a lot of them ending up in my tutoring program. And what I've seen is like, I have a student who he gets into fights a lot and things like that. But I have a good relationship with him from the tutoring program, and I'm able to talk to him more one-on-one in that program. And when he made 9 points of growth on his MAP score, we celebrated. He wasn't at grade level yet, but he had he had gone over his projected growth, and we were able to celebrate that. Like 2 points was our average and he made 9 and it was amazing. And in the hallways, I was high-fiving him. In tutoring program, we celebrated that. Like, and it was a big thing. And you could just tell he felt good. He felt happy.
And he probably behaved fine for you. And And I see this all the time where there will be a child with this teacher, they behave wonderfully. And then with this teacher, they don't. And what the teachers don't always understand is there's a level of shame, right? And when they feel that shame, if you're a teacher that's making a child feel shamed, they're going to act out. They're not going to be good. But when you're a teacher that makes them feel empowered, secure, and that unconditional faith and love in them, they will do everything to keep you pleased. I mean, they really want to please. And unfortunately, that's when I just say 95% of their behavior is us. And a lot of times we're not showing them the respect that we want them to reciprocate to us. So they don't treat us with respect. Yeah. And that's when adults really need to look in the mirror and ask themselves, what am I doing to cause this child to behave in this manner? Because the teachers like you who come from a place of love and respect are being treated with love and respect. And that's a harsh reality. A lot of teachers don't like to admit to themselves, but it's the truth.
Yeah. I recall even like this year alone, I had a student who just the back talk and, you know, the classic, like everyone's just sitting there and being like, I just can't stand this and talking over us. And I just held him back after class one day. And I was like, look, I'm not appreciating the disrespect. And immediately he went on the defense saying like, oh, I'm actually the one disrespectful. In that moment, like I could feel myself getting angry. And then I paused and I went, can you tell me more? How am I being disrespectful to you? And he immediately, like, you could see his face, like he was not expecting that. And then he went into detail. Yeah. And the hard thing, it's a very hard thing hearing a child tell you how you're being rude or disrespectful to them, especially when you don't realize it.
Yeah.
And I had this conversation with this kid and I was like, okay, like, how can I do better though? What steps do you want me to take to do better? And at first he's like, oh, we'll both just try. And I was like, I want to know concrete ways that I can do better for you.
Right.
And that conversation just changed everything.
Yep.
And that's just what needed to happen. And I think it's hard to hear that from a child, but also if a child thinks you're being rude to them, it's on you to change your actions to help work with them in that. And, you know, we even were able to check in a couple times. It was like, hey, I want to know, like, how am I doing? Am I doing better? I want to be a good teacher for you. And that led to a lot more respect and a lot more conversations that this child was able to have with me and felt more comfortable to talk to me about.
Yep. And one of the things I think that you bring up that's really, really important to know is that it's ego, right? So many people let ego get in the way. And one of my biggest life lessons is that I've noticed is ego is and pride is one of the biggest causes to make people fail. And if in every aspect of your life, if you can't set your ego aside, you're going to fail, you know, and for you to be able to say, wait a second, maybe I'm doing something wrong. That took a bit of humility. The humility is really, to me, like that ultimate, when people really get to that ultimate level of growth and development, right? It's like, it doesn't matter. We're not perfect. None of us are. And being able to recognize that, own it, and take accountability, that's when true growth and human development really, really happens. Yes. So that's what makes you so such a great teacher, is that you're able to look at yourself in the mirror with honesty. And your ego doesn't really come into play when kids are honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why you can show up the way you are. So I really commend you. And I love that I've been able to have you, Renee. It's been awesome. It's everything I thought it would be. So I know you and I could talk forever. I think we could do with it. So we'll have to have you back. But do you have any final thoughts before we sign off?
Yeah, I just think the most important thing you can do is listen. You know, we tell kids to put on their listening ears, and sometimes we need to do that too.
I 100%. That's a great one too. We need to put in our listening ears as well. Yes. So thank you so much, Renee. And for those of you watching, I hope this has been helpful. Let us know in the comments what you thought. We would love to hear from you. And also remember that the tickets for the Child Care Business Summit are still on sale. And it's on my birthday. So you guys have got to be there so we can celebrate my birthday together this year. And this year we're going to be in Dallas. So make sure you get your tickets for the summit before time runs out. I hope everybody has a wonderful week and just remembers to show up for the children and stop labeling and start listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for joining Evelyn today. For more information, please visit childcarebusinessprofessionals.com.